Hell, because that's the end credits song in Halloween 2, where Mike Myers gets blown up. It's great. Mike Myers gets blown to shit. And that was supposed to be the last one, but then they came back and they made Season of the Witch, which was a piece of shit. And then they came back after that and were like, oh, Season of the Witch was terrible, so we have to bring Michael Myers back, even though the ending of Halloween 2, there's no fucking way he would have survived that, but, you know, whatever. So, I kind of like Halloween 2, actually. It's okay.
I don't think I think of Back to the Future when I think that song.
Why not?
I just not one of the five songs I think about from Back to the Future, I suppose.
I always think of either Halloween 2 or Back to the Future. Halloween 2 comes first, but...
I think I think of that cell phone commercial. Whatever it is.
What's... What?
It's some Samsung or something.
Is it in...
Mr. Sandman.
Oh.
Bring me a dream. I think it is a cell phone commercial. It's an ad. I don't think of Back to the Future is my point. There are... at least two or three songs I think of from Back to the Future first.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That song, for some reason, is creepy to me, and it just sticks in my memory no matter
what. Go back in time. Yeah. That one, and then you gotta go...
Beat It. I always think of Beat It, too, from Back to the Future Part 2, which is my least favorite of the trilogy.
It's
my least favorite.
Ooh, you're so wrong. You're so wrong.
You want my order?
Yeah.
1, 3, 2. Well, yeah, obviously.
I didn't think you were going that far, huh?
Obviously.
No, Part 2 is underrated.
It's not bad.
Listen, go back and rewatch Part 2.
My younger brother, who is like the biggest Back to the Future fan you could possibly imagine,
thinks that it's no good. Here's why I can't imagine that. Because I know a bigger Back to the Future fan in my life, and you're looking at him.
Okay?
You're looking at him.
It's probably the most iconic, but...
Yes. The iconography, everything that we think of as Back to the Future, when we make a reference to what Back to the Future got right, is from Back to the Future Part 2.
Yeah.
It's the one that we think and talk about the most.
But I could apply that to Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome, and if you watch Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome, it's clearly the worst of the original three.
Ooh, no, that's not true.
Yeah,
no, it isn't.
What?
No, that's what? Not true. That's not
what?
True. No.
What?
No.
What?
No.
What?
No. First one's the what? Worst. First one's the worst. First one's dated, dude.
I know it's dated, but it's so fucking weird, man.
It's dated.
Oh god, I love
it's
that.
It's dated
style.
And not as weird as you want it to be. It's never as crazy and weird and steampunk. As
I think
you
it's
want
more.
It to be.
I think it's more crazy than 3. Personally.
I mean, first of all, 2 is the best, right? Yeah. Road Warrior is the best.
You want the best? Well, of the original 3.
Yeah.
Yes, it's the best of the original 3. Right. It's not the best Mad Max
movie. Fury Road is the best Mad Max movie.
Yes.
Right. That's... Road Warrior is really good, though.
Yeah.
Really good.
It sucks to say that it's not the best Mad Max anymore. It really does, but, you know...
It's pretty close.
It's close. Oh, yeah.
It's absolutely close. Tina Turner is having a blast in Part 3. Again, and as you said, the iconography... Who run Bartertown? I mean, that's the,
yeah. But my point,
it's great.
My point is, when people remember it, they're like, yeah, they remember it because it's the most quotable and it's probably the most visually distinct of the three.
But it has the best moments. It's the one that people think about the most. Why doesn't that make it the best movie?
No, it doesn't have the best moments. That's why I say Part 2 or The Road Warrior is the best, because that one has the most memorable moments. Whereas,
clearly not.
Because you get Thunderdome and then. Nothing else. Thunderdome is the only distinctly memorable part.
I hate when people say that. It's like, you know what? It would be great, but it's only great because of that really awesome scene in the middle. But the really awesome scene in the middle is part of the movie.
It's not as
good.
That's
what I never understand about it. It's like, yeah, man, you know, the only reason why people like it is because that's the one that everybody talks about the most, and it's the one that they quote the most, and it's the one they remember the most. You know, I mean, why can't we look past all of the things that make a good movie and realize that it's not the best movie? That's all I'm saying. Like, maybe there's a reason why Thunderdome is a cultural touchstone. And maybe there's a reason why Back to the Future Part 2 is a cultural touchstone. And no one remembers anything about Part 3. Except for Jules Verne wrote 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. That's the only thing we remember from that.
Not the Old West scenario?
No!
It's a lot better than Part 2, dude.
False.
It's just a better movie.
So wrong. So wrong. There is no character in the Back to the Future franchise as fun as Old Biff. There is not one.
Oh, he's the worst.
Old Biff is, and I know now it's like, oh, what a Trump metaphor. It's like, what is
what?
Reexamining part two of Back to the Future in the era of Trump, BuzzFeed article. Like, I take all of that aside, dude. Excellent film. Excellent film.
I like Back to the Future Part 2, but it's just not as good as Part 3. It's just Part 3 is just an all-around more concise, more just better constructed film. It's more effective too. So I usually say, yeah, that one.
In a weird way, it's cheesier than Part 2. And Part 2 is cheesy. But somehow they manage with the older Marty character. What was his name in the, you know?
Hoverboards don't work on water unless you got power. You.
Lorraine!
It's so ridiculous, man. It's ridiculous by my standards. Think about that.
It's a hoot. It's
yeah.
A hoot.
Oh, yeah.
I'm telling you, part three, you look back. Who you calling Yella? I mean, come on, man.
But you're kind of laughing.
It's a bad. Here's the problem.
And it's the one where the plot makes the least amount of sense, too.
Part two does.
Yes.
Because it's all plot. Because the whole movie is plot.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's great, though. Yes, we understand it's just a remake of the first one. That's all they're doing is they're just replaying the best moments from the first one. Sure. But, like, it's inventive and it's interesting. And, again, it is part of culture for a reason. Part three, like, the train. I love the train scene in part three. Yeah. I love when they're pushing the hoverboard off the cliff. I think it's awesome. But, like, the time-traveling train should be a part of popular culture, and it's not. And there's a reason why it's not.
Yeah.
Because it's not as cool as a hoverboard.
Ugh, that's true.
You know what I mean?
But the hoverboard, and, like, what else, Nico?
I also hate the broad. I hate the woman in part three.
I hate her. I kind of like her.
I hate her. I don't see what Doc sees in her. I don't understand why Jules Verne would be a reason why they would fall in love. I don't read Jules Verne.
Jules Verne.
You know, maybe I'm just too stupid to get the plot of Back to the Future Part 3 and the motivations of Back to the Future Part 3.
I read Jules Verne. No, I don't.
I just think it's, I just find it boring. And it's also just a poor imitation of a Western and not a legitimate Western. Whereas Part 2 is not a poor imitation of science fiction. It's legitimate science fiction.
Okay. That's not true, but sure. Because I kind of disagree with a lot.
What do you mean?
I just think it's so silly, dude. Like, it just seems so... it seems like it's mocking itself.
It is.
So...
Yeah, it is.
So it's...
Part 3 does not have that self-awareness, though.
It works better, though.
Part 3 falls flat. No, because it...
Like, because Part 2 feels almost like a parody of Back to the Future, whereas Part 3 feels... far more, I guess, sincere and authentic. It feels more like what made the first one work for me personally.
And the first one works. Why?
You don't like the first one?
No, the first one is one of my five favorite movies of all time. Okay, I'm asking you why the first one works, whereas part two and part three fail.
I don't know. It's charming, but it takes itself very, very seriously at the same time.
It does not.
No. God damn it.
This is exactly my point.
What do you mean?
This is precisely my point. Part one is a fun sci-fi romp.
Yes, I'd say it takes itself seriously in its fun
sci-fi. No, it doesn't. How?
It takes itself seriously in its fun science fiction, ridiculous, what's the word? Because it knows what it is, Nico. That's what I'm saying. But it takes that element very seriously in how it incorporates it into the story. Whereas two feels like they recognize that and they went a little too far with it
and part three overcorrects and tries to make a boring frontier Western.
Well, I don't think it's that boring.
Okay. But well, okay. We can agree to disagree, okay. I suppose. Yeah.
You don't like Westerns generally?
No, I think Westerns, Westerns are not my taste.
Okay.
It's certainly not part of my palate, and I have not seen enough of them to really to have an intense conversation about them.
I like Westerns.
So. Yes. I do appreciate what Westerns stand for. I appreciate what they say about our culture. Mm-hmm. And in terms of telling us specifically about a time and a place, you can't get much better in cinema than a Western. All that being said, I know enough about Westerns to know that Back to the Future Part 3 misses everything that makes a Western good. Fair?
And Back to the Future Part 2 misses everything about what makes a science fiction film good.
And that is wrong.
Other than its silliness. That's about it.
It's not silliness. It is
certain silliness, I guess. The liberties they take with the science fiction is quite silly.
The liberties they take with the science fiction. Plot holes, guys! What?
Like, the Eggo pizza in the oven thing.
It's great!
It's kind of stupid.
It's
great! I'm just like, okay. Like, it's fun, but it's like, I you know, my brain is turned off for this. That's fine. It's okay.
We can do this for hours.
Yes, we could.
And we will if we don't stop this right now. So we'll stop.
But why did... The Biff thing bothers me when Biff comes back through time and he changes the future.
Right. By the way, here's what I love about that.
It doesn't make sense.
No, see, I never see this in science fiction, in time travel movies at all. Yeah. That is exactly how I would use time travel.
Okay.
If I was old Biff, that is exactly what I would do. I wouldn't like send criminals to be assassinated by the earlier versions of themselves.
Yep.
I wouldn't try to go back and kill Hitler. I wouldn't try to do any of like the normal time travel tropes of cinema. I would just take a sports almanac, go back, put $1 million on the United States in the 84 Russia Olympic game, and call it a day.
That should change the entire timeline that he comes back to, though, right?
What do you mean?
Because he goes back.
Yes, that's time travel, Adam. Yeah, that's how it works.
He goes. Yeah, that's right. And he changes the future, right? But then he comes back to the 2015, and it's exactly the same as when he left. Shouldn't it be the different 2015 that he created back in 1955 because he gave the almanac and, you know, old Biff became rich and awesome and, you know, basically fucked up the entire town?
Were you not paying attention when Doc Brown had his chalk in the chalkboard behind him?
Yes.
Were you not understanding the premise of the multiple timelines?
Yes.
And how it splits off and becomes multiple universes?
Yeah, and he goes, he should come back to the one that's altered.
No.
Yes.
He goes back to his original.
Yeah.
No, that's not how it works, Adam.
But that's how time
when you,
travel
when
works.
When you create a riff in time, it jets off and becomes multiple timelines. It's very simple. What is so hard to understand about string theory, Adam?
Do you know what string theory is?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
No, I have no idea, actually. I can say that I do, but I don't. I've seen one Nova special on PBS about it, and that's about it.
And this is why time travel... Back to the Future gets a pass because it's Back to the Future, but that's movies like Looper. Even though I like Looper, if you think about the time theory in that, it's
watch
like...
Watch your mouth.
It's like, watch I like
your
Looper.
Mouth. Watch your
I
mouth.
I like Looper.
Watch your mouth. Looper's one of the finest sci-fi films of the 21st century. Could be one of the best.
Yeah.
Okay, keep going. Yeah.
But again, time travel is very, very hard to get right in movies because it creates this paradox and it's impossible to explain because we don't fully understand time travel, and it's like, well, if you do this, isn't that going to create this? And it's a big chicken and the egg bullshit, and it just like Primer might get it right. I haven't actually seen Primer, but apparently that movie actually gets it very right. So
see Primer.
Okay.
Okay. Good. Logic in films. Coming from the guy that loved the movie about the demon clown. Coming from that guy. Okay. Suspension of disbelief, Adam Hall. That's all. That is the illusion of the silver screen.
For the record, I love Back to the Future Part 2 to death, but it's fun to egg you on.
That was a close place in my heart.
Yes.
You bastard. Okay. We're gonna do the show now.
Okay.
This is Movie Hopping. Adam Hall is across the table from me. I am Nico DiGorio. This is our movie review show where we talk about movies that are in the theaters right now and tell people if they're worth their time or not and try to have interesting, intelligent, insightful conversations. Any word that starts with in, basically, is what we're going for. Adam, how are you doing, sir?
I'm fine.
Good.
I'm fine.
I'm glad you're fine.
I'm fine.
We're not doing video today because fuck video.
Yeah.
You don't need to see our faces.
No.
All you need is the dulcet tones of our soothing voices. That's right. We're here talking about a movie about a clown.
Not really.
It's called It.
Yeah.
And it's it is it. Okay. This has been bugging me all week because I can't tell you how many tweets I've seen. It is awesome. It is great. I love it. And I think, and every time, because I'm so stupid, I think, what are you talking about? What is it? And I still have it. It takes me about 10 seconds to realize, oh, that's right. There's a movie called It out.
Yes.
And I just, it's like who's on first in my head, but I'm doing it with myself.
You would be the only person to fall for that stupid trap.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of course.
I fall for it every time.
It. I-T. Capital I-T. That's how you know, Nico.
Is that what it is?
Capital
I-T. Is that what it is?
That's what it is.
Okay. I haven't seen it spelled that way, though.
Okay. I see it spelled that way all the time.
Okay. This movie is breaking the world.
Which is, I didn't think this was going to, I knew it was going to do well. I didn't think it would do anywhere near this well. Holy shit.
This movie made $130, is that right? $1 million at the box office.
The domestic box office. I think it's almost at $200 million now.
That is insane.
Yeah.
That is not, that is, it's like when you're like watching Aaron Rodgers play football and they come up with this crazy stat, like Aaron has 60 touchdowns and zero interceptions at home over his career. And you're like, what? That's not even right. That's like, it's like there was a stat this week where the Patriots are, when leading by 10 points in any game, are 101-2 in those games. If they're leading by 10 at any point, they went 101 and they've lost twice. That's the exact same thought that went through my head, the exact same feeling when I saw, here's what it was, $123 million in 3 days for a hard R. And I'm like, hard R horror film about a clown. What's going on? Explain this to me.
I think it's great timing, first of all. Wonderful timing for this movie to come out. Arguably, okay. First of all, the best movie of the summer.
Okay. Not really a summer movie, but I'll, okay.
But you know what I mean.
Okay.
Of this time period, whatever you want to call it.
Uh-huh.
Best movie to come out in a while, and I'm excluding Dunkirk because mm-hmm. I'm an asshole. But, you know, beside the point. And it's also in the wake of those fucking clown sightings that people were going apeshit about and the media could not get enough of.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a plus. Mm-hmm. Also, this movie is tapping into a lot of what people seem to like nowadays, and that's the 80s nostalgia.
Oh, they love it, don't they?
With Stranger Things.
Oh, they love to be... Mike from Stranger Things is in it.
Yeah.
It is my favorite part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just... love to think of Spielberg as their Shakespeare. I think audiences just, they love the idea that, oh my God, Shakespeare. Yeah. Or I'm sorry, Shakespeare. That Spielberg created cinema and now we will spend the entirety of the film medium celebrating his greatness. They just think it is, they cannot get enough of 80s Spielberg E.T. nostalgia.
What if Spielberg made it?
It would suck. I'm sorry, it would suck.
Spielberg has made one film that could pass as a horror film.
Yeah.
One that I consider a horror movie in disguise because I'm a film nerd.
And it's called?
Jaws.
Okay.
And that's about it. Okay. That's about it.
Fair enough. Yeah. No, I'm fine with Spielberg.
I love Spielberg.
I'm fine with him retiring to Tom Hanks in historical biopic land. I'm okay with that. I'm totally cool with him making Bridge of Spies for the rest of his life. I don't want him touching sci-fi.
Have you seen the trailer for Ready Player One?
No.
I'm like, it's completely different from what he's been doing.
Okay.
So, we'll see.
Did you see the BFG?
No.
Okay.
I did not see the BFG.
Stay as far away. I don't need him to recapture the magic. The magic existed already. Retire, be an old man, and make old man movies. I'm totally cool. Like, I'll fall asleep during Lincoln, but I'm sure that plenty of seniors will see it 5 times.
I like
and
Lincoln.
I'm totally... Okay, well, you're wrong, but that's all right.
I like Lincoln.
It's fine. I love Bridge of Spies. I think Bridges Prize is dope. That's a great cable movie. Oh, Mark Rylance is awesome in it. I agree. I'm totally cool with him just making snooty British historical dramas.
Yeah.
I want it. Cool. Stay away. Anyway, I have a stat that's going to blow your mind. Transformers: The Last Knight. Okay? That's a film that came out this year.
Transfivers 5. God, I love that so fucking much.
Starring Marky Mark. Yeah. As I don't know, some blue-collar mechanic that discovers a transformer.
Do I remember his name? Hold on.
Did you see any of these?
I have seen 4.
You have?
Yeah, on my computer. I didn't pay to see it.
I think I found a transformer.
I think we just found... I can't even say it. I think we just found a transformer. Oh, my God.
So... Transformers, Michael Bay, this has become a punchline for big blockbusters. It is shorthand for stupid big blockbusters. The first couple movies in the series made a ridiculous amount of money, and it has justified Michael Bay's existence. Okay?
Yeah.
How much money? This came out on June 21st of this year. How much money has Transformers The Last Knight grossed in its entire theatrical run thus far?
$600 million.
$600 million domestically.
Domestically?
Domestically.
No.
How much money has it made in the United States in its run thus far?
Oh, God.
Given that it has made $123 million in its opening weekend and is currently grossed at $132 million. That's what
domestically.
Domestically. Okay. That's how much it has made in the United States over the last 5 days. How much has Transformers 5... a massive summer blockbuster tentpole. How much money has that made in its entire theatrical run over the last 2.5 months?
$200 million.
$130 million.
Ooh. Oh, wow.
In 5 days, the Bill Skarsgård starring horror film based on a Stephen King novel that had a lot of... like production hurdles to jump through, a lot of turmoil off screen, and again, is a hard R movie where kids are getting murdered, has made more money than Transformers 5.
Good.
Okay.
I'm happy with that.
Okay.
Thank God.
You think it's because of nostalgia that people are flocking to this thing?
Well, partly because of nostalgia, also because I think it's a good movie.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what you think about that.
Let's talk about this for a second.
Okay.
We're fresh, by the way. We just came back from the theater. He had seen this already.
Yep.
I had not seen this. He's telling me it's his favorite movie of the year. He's
favorite movie. I don't know if it's the best movie, but yeah, right now for the mood I'm in, yeah, it's probably my favorite.
This is it. This is your cup of tea.
Yes.
Why is it your cup of tea?
Oh God, I don't know. It's one of those weird. It's not a genre of film, really, because I have a soft spot for movies like E.T. and The Goonies. You know, Spielberg films.
Sure.
I always have. But
Stand by Me.
Oh,
another Stephen King adaptation.
Stand by Me is a better movie than It, Nico. I'm not going to argue against that. Don't worry. Okay. Don't worry. But yes, exactly. Like I like these kind of, you know, these. Because this is something that I like seeing movies that show kids being kids in the way that I kind of was.
Right.
Because I was very much like all these kids. You know, I don't like the – when I see movies portray kids of this age and they're like the movies are PG-13, they're very watered down.
Yeah.
And I get very bothered when I don't hear them spouting out, you know, certain profanities and, you know, they're, you know, everyone's taking a jab at one another but in a good friendly way.
Sure.
But they're always going on adventures.
Yep.
And that's exactly what I would do. So it I don't know if it so much taps into my nostalgia. Well, I don't know. Maybe it does. But it's a part of my childhood that resonates with me quite dearly when I see it in a film and done correctly. You know,
yeah.
The fact that they actually said retarded in this.
Right, they did.
Was great.
Which is a word that I used. I'm sorry, people. Like every other second.
Yes. Yes.
That was the only thing that we called each other.
Yep.
We called each other gay. We called each other retarded.
No, you didn't call each other gay.
Good point.
We didn't call each other gay.
Yeah.
You called each other faggots.
Yes. Yes, we did.
You just did.
Yes, we did.
And retarded.
Yep.
And you said fuck more than any other word.
Yes. Because it was. Oh my God. Once we learned like what that word was.
Euphoria.
I still remember the first time that I heard the word. I was tricked into saying it on the school bus. By a bully. I think I was in like the first grade.
When did I first hear it? I don't know.
I remember the exact place I was at, and they spelled it out for me because it was like, oh my god, it was dirty if you said it or whatever. And they spelled it out and they said, pronounce this word. And I said, fuck. And the whole bus, the whole bus turned around and was like, what did you just say? What did the first grader just say? And ever since then, it was like this whole thing where we would trick each other into saying swear words. Do you remember like when they would have you grab your tongue? You ever do this trick with your friends? They'd be like, stick out your tongue and say apple. And you go, ahole. And then you like say asshole. Yeah, it was amazing. And that was the, and once you learn that you could say these things, it's like you never stopped.
Mm-hmm.
100%. And they do this here. They don't pull any punches. You know what I mean?
No.
Which is great.
Oh, yeah. But then this also taps into, at the same time, this movie relates to or connects to me on the, I guess, the adult levels in the sense that I have grown up with these just really weird, either weird premises or fucked up premises. Arguably my favorite movie of all time is Alien.
Yeah.
But that's
not a fucked up premise, though.
Well,
they're in outer space. Alien comes and kills them. I mean, I guess at the time it was revolutionary.
No, but that's, an alien impregnates you and then it blows out of your stomach and it's kind of rapey. You know,
yeah, it is.
It's a little fucked up.
Sure.
But it's, you know, it's dark for someone who saw it at 10 years old.
Yeah.
And it's...
Jesus. Wow. Your third grade is very different from mine. As I was just waning off of Blue's Clues.
Well, no, but before that, it was like Gremlins and Tremors, which I would watch like daily.
Yeah.
And I've always loved these just kind of very... I don't know, these just objectively bizarre premises that somehow work. And, you know, I wouldn't think they would work at this point. Like, if you were to show me, if you were to pitch me an idea of a town that is being attacked by worms, giant worms with snake tongues, I'd be like, no. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Sure.
But somehow a movie like that works for me.
Yeah, exactly.
I love Tremors so fucking much.
It's,
I love Tremors.
Tremors is delight. Tremors is such a hoot.
It makes me so happy. And to me, a premise and a story like it is kind of neatly in that vein to a certain extent.
Yeah. It does almost seem like a bygone era where we could take ridiculous premises.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just because we saw them when we were kids, but it doesn't seem like they make ridiculous premises done with heart.
Yes.
It's almost like it's going to be so super dark and disturbing and real and gritty, or it's going to be goofy now and that sort of in between zone that you don't see a lot of stuff there anymore. And I hesitate to say that this is not gritty and dark and disturbing because it is.
It is.
But it does almost feel like, and maybe it's not necessarily an 80s thing, but it does feel like they were treated with a lot more, with a lot more care and a lot more humanity than they are now.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. You know, like,
and that's Stephen King's thing. You know,
well,
what do you mean?
Stephen King is an interesting one. I mean, I can't figure Stephen King out.
Why? What do you mean?
Because I agree with everything you said, and then all of a sudden he'll write the just most confusing shit into his books,
like
child orgy scenes.
Okay, we'll talk about that later. Don't spoil. Please don't spoil. Yes, he's a bit obsessed with the weird and the disturbing.
You know, Pet Cemetery, fucking what else did, what's the weird Stephen King, The Mist?
Yes, I love The Mist.
I love The Mist too. The Mist is awesome.
I've never read the book. I don't.
That's a short. It's like a short story.
Yeah,
but then you get what else is another bizarre Stephen? I mean, The Shining is really, really weird.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not. It's hard to count the Shining, the movie, because I don't really consider that a Stephen King movie. It's a Kubrick film through and through.
Sure.
But like they did a miniseries based on The Shining, which was much closer to the book.
Mm-hmm.
And even The Green Mile, it's just like I can always tell it's a Stephen King movie by its premise, and I don't always know why. It's just,
well, there's an obsession with the supernatural, but also
it's not always supernatural, though. It's like kind of this weird gray area where it's kind of supernatural, but also kind of like he plays around with alternate dimensions a lot, and that's kind of what this movie is. It's kind of a, you know, a breeding of the two.
Yeah.
You know,
there is always and I hesitate to use the word saccharine, but I will anyway. There is a sappiness and they're a bit saccharine. The characters are, I wouldn't say one dimensional, and I wouldn't say that these relationships don't feel real, but it's certainly laid on thick.
Yeah.
Which I always interpret sometimes as him apologizing for his premises in a lot of ways. It's like, you know, I can't make a movie about a prisoner that can bring people to life without having that moment of you know, the connection between him and a rat. You know what I mean? It's always like just sometimes just go for it, and he doesn't always just go for it.
Unless it's like the Shawshank Redemption.
Well, the Shawshank Redemption is such a totally different thing. But no, yes, it is. You take away the weird premise, and that's what you're left with.
Yeah.
You're left with a very sappy but very compelling and a very sort of viscerally grabbing emotional arc. But at the same time, you're thinking, all right, it's not exactly how it would go. You know what I mean?
Which would you rather watch, Green Mile or Shawshank?
I think I like the Shawshank better.
Okay.
But I'll tell you what, the Green Mile is the one that when I put it on when it's on cable, I'm stuck there for the longest.
All right. Because I'm kind of Green Mile is my favorite, and I'm always stuck there the longest. And I've seen, God only knows how many times I've seen that fucking movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost getting like I can't, like I don't like turning it on now because I've seen it so many times.
Yeah.
It's one of those things.
Right.
You know,
I always thought Shawshank was better, but I'll tell you what, Green Mile just, I don't know. It's got the best, it has this, it puts you in this place. Mm. And that sense of what the Green Mile is like, it's such a long movie.
Yeah.
But it's not boring because you legitimately feel like you're there with them.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's such a claustrophobic, like time stands still for 3 hours and you're just there awaiting just this slow march of death. I just love it.
Oh, yeah.
And it wraps me up way more than Shawshank does, even though I love Shawshank too.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's incredible attention to detail and it's... I don't know. It's kind of the way it develops its characters that feels, you know. I always like it in movies like that where the characters just feel like they've lived together their entire lives. You get that sense in both Shawshank and The Green Mile, but almost The Green Mile especially. I do agree.
Yeah.
But yeah, the tension though in Shawshank or no Green Mile, well both, but Green Mile especially.
Absolutely.
Like you were saying about the end, the march to the you know the final conclusion in the chair. It's just palpable.
It is 100%, and it really does give you that sense of this is what it's like waiting around until we kill these people, because that's what death row is. It's this idea that all of us together, we're going to spend the last moments of your lives as we wait for this arbitrary day to come when we kill you, when we do this barbaric thing, even though you are a monster and you probably deserve this.
Mm-hmm.
You can only imagine what that would be like. And I don't know if you can capture it 100% on cinema, but that does a pretty damn good job, I think.
Well, it's a lot of things because it's not just depressing the whole time. It is also quite cheerful and sad and happy. But then, you know, it can be uplifting and then it can be quite depressing.
But it is this plateau, though. It is. Yeah. Although there are a broad range of emotions, there is this sense that nothing happens here.
No.
You're not going to – there's no light at the end of this tunnel. There's no – big arc that we can go through together and there'll be a happy ending. Like, this is the end.
Yeah.
And it's just a matter of how long we're going to take to get to the end.
Mm-hmm.
The point is, though, King does have a tendency, maybe because he's just a very sensitive person and feels bad for what he does. Maybe it's that he doesn't exactly grasp human emotions in 100% the right ways all the time. And we can argue about this until the cows come home. I'm not informed enough to know this. But it does, there is a weird sort of clashing of those two that doesn't always gel for me, which is why I can sort of tell why a Stephen King thing is a Stephen King thing. Does it make sense?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
I see Stephen King as far as his book. He feels like the writer version of Spielberg in a lot of ways, which is funny we were bringing that up. Is in terms of his popularity and the types of stories that he writes, they feel like they belong on screen, though.
Oh, certainly.
That's the thing.
There is a cinematic quality to a lot of that, and that's why they work so well.
Oh, yeah.
And they continue to be adapted. Do you like Misery?
Yep.
I love Misery. I love it. And that's just one where it's like, how was this a book first? Like, this works so perfectly on screen as a work of horror. As it is just such a great character study. Like, I'm shocked that wasn't a screenplay first.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Stand By Me is a similar thing. Like, this was a short story.
Yeah.
You know, this was however many pages it was. Like, this belongs on the screen. It's just – and it's funny that Kubrick one of the great... The Shining is such a fascinating movie, and I love talking about it so much. I think there's a million ways you can talk about it. It's funny that King hates that adaptation the most, because it feels very... trying to think of how I want to put this. You're right. It doesn't... It feels like it was made for the screen, and it does sort of miss that I don't know, the kingness of it is not exactly there 100% of the time.
Exactly. That's why I was saying that movie...
But it's my favorite Stephen King movie, I think.
It might be my... I don't know. That's a tough one. There's a few that I could go back and forth on. But yeah, no, it's... I mean, that's partially due to the fact that Kubrick was helming it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it is... If I didn't know any better, I would probably not know it's a Stephen King adaptation.
Yeah.
The thing is, it's deliberately unfaithful to the novel. It basically has nothing to do
with
it.
What do they change?
Everything.
Be more specific.
Name something.
Okay. The plot of the film is that a family...
The plot of the film is a guy...
Go to a hotel.
The guy goes nuts, tries to kill his family.
Right.
And that's pretty much where it ends.
Okay, but that happens in the books.
That's about it.
How does the book end?
The hotel blows up.
Okay.
In like a fiery blaze, and then Danny has like his graduation, and his dead father is there, and he's like happy, and he's like, hey, you know, good on you, son, for graduating. And I think Halloran marries the mom.
Okay.
It's a completely different tone and attitude.
I will say, though, the relationship between the family is a very un-Stephen King relationship, though.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of love in that family unit. And no. I think the idea...
It's about a father who fucking hates his family.
Yeah. That is very un-King.
Yeah.
It doesn't have that sort of saccharine emotional weight to it.
Exactly. Well, he has even said that he, you know, in his own words, I find the movie very cold.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like...
But the book isn't cold?
Apparently not.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. I could see that for sure. Yeah. Because, yeah, King is not cold.
And Kubrick,
well,
pretty cold.
Yeah, we know.
Pretty
old
cold.
Stanley. Old yeah. Stanley. That's why we love him.
What a cheery guy.
Yeah. Real chipper. Okay. I think I'm ready to give my thoughts. I'm still not quite sure what my thoughts are yet. I just have more questions than answers.
All right. Ask me questions. It'll be one of these podcasts.
Okay. Why was I expecting more?
I don't know.
Why was I expecting this to mean more than it means? Why was I expecting more than just a story about an evil clown and kids that defeat it?
I didn't, because I don't really see it as just a movie, but I see it as, you know, just people facing their fears and growing up because of it. That's what it felt like more to me, because the evil clown's like barely in it.
You know, I get that.
Yeah.
I understand that. Why was I expecting more than that?
I don't know, Nico.
I'm not quite sure. I don't know if it's the reviews. I don't know if it's the hype, the trailers, whatever the case may be. I kept looking for the I kept waiting for that turn where the kids were going to come to some catharsis about something.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess they got there, but for some reason it didn't quite hit me in the way that I was expecting it to hit me.
Okay.
And maybe that's how I am trained to watch these types of movies, but I kept waiting for the twist. I kept waiting for the, and maybe not necessarily a plot twist, but I kept waiting for the, you know, the thing that brings this all together, the larger message than just we have to face our fears. The clown is a metaphor for something. It's what the something about the adults in the story, about why the adults are ignoring their children. It, for some reason, to me, just felt like more of a fun popcorn summer blockbuster than I wanted it to be. And maybe that is my problem. Okay. Maybe I should have came into this looking for something entertaining. But I don't know. It didn't get there.
All right. You wanted more depth?
I don't know about depth, but I just don't. I don't know. Maybe I don't know. I don't know what I was expecting. I really don't.
Because I was expecting, I was expecting something along the lines of like The Conjuring, where it's just for the scares and not much else. Even though I don't mind The Conjuring, actually, but it's as far as substance, there's really not that much there to begin with. It's not like The Exorcist, where it's just like layers and layers of just juicy, terrible goodness, which I'm obsessed with, but it hit this weird, the perfect mark of kind of like, you know, we keep going back to like Spielberg, but it hit the marks that a lot of earlier Spielberg films do in terms of its, it's balance of meaning something but also just being a ton of fun at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah. It didn't go overboard with anything, but it also didn't feel pretentious to me.
Yeah.
Which is another
No, it certainly
thing.
Wasn't pretentious.
Yes.
And I'm happy that it wasn't pretentious. Yes. But for some reason this is maybe just my problem.
Okay.
I just wanted it all to mean a little bit more.
Okay.
I just wanted this to I just find the idea of you got to face your fears and we're going to defeat this thing with friendship. I find that to be kind of dull. Right. And I wanted to be surprised a little more for a piece of material that is very disturbing and doesn't pull any punches.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of felt like it pulled some punches thematically and sure. didn't quite talk about the issues that it wanted to talk about
mm-hmm.
in the ways that I would like them to talk about them.
Yeah.
For example, I thought the treatment of molestation
yeah.
and child abuse.
How did I know that was going to be the first thing you would say? I know you a little too well. I was like, he's going to bring up Bev's dad, isn't he?
Yeah, I found that
flat.
I found that flat is the nicest word I can use to describe that. I think flat is the nicest thing I can say about it. It just felt very underdeveloped and kind of weak.
Yeah.
It just kind of felt weak. And there were a number of those issues. The idea of the bully killing his father came out of nowhere and really didn't say anything about their relationship because it didn't take the time to develop that relationship.
No.
And at the end of the day, it was just the clown made the kid go crazy and kill his father.
Yeah.
Beverly has this moment, and we're just going to get into spoilers. I'm sorry. Yeah. We should just say that. Beverly has this moment where I believe she kills her father, who has been...
Well, she knocks him out.
Something pretty bad. Yeah. I mean, there's blood all over the place.
Well, she hits him over the head with the lid of a toilet seat.
Sure. It's going to hurt.
Yeah.
It's going to leave a mark. She does this, and all we're supposed to take away from that is kids should face their fears because adults are evil? I don't know.
I don't know. Adults are evil. I don't think...
It kept hinting at this idea because there was a lot of lingering shots on parents. Parents were never fully developed characters and was never from their point of view, but there were these weird, creepy shots of the parents are part of the horror of this town,
mm-hmm.
right? There are three things that are part of the horror, right? First off is the clown coming in the form of all of these kids' largest fears. Number two is their bullies, right? Yeah. This thing that you have to conquer, that you have to stand up to. And number three are the adults that don't give a shit. And for some reason, one was fully fleshed out. Two was fairly fleshed out, and three was not fleshed out at all. And for some reason, I found myself more interested in those parts, and it in the way that Stephen King tends to do, it gave me a very surface-level, one-dimensional interpretation of that.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you just have a problem with the adult characters?
I guess. Maybe that's my problem. I just wanted more than face your fears, kids, hold hands, and everything will be okay.
You got to be careful because then it becomes a little bloated and too much to handle.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing. One of the things I was worried about is that this movie is going to take on more than it could handle thematically.
Yep.
And one of the reasons I liked it so much is because it honed down on the things it absolutely needed to get right.
Right.
And it does. Sure. I really do think it does get the things it needed to get right, right.
Sure.
And maybe it could have gone a little further with the parent characters, but at the same time, I didn't really feel like it cared too much about them. Like, the movie didn't really feel like that's what the movie was concerned with. It was more concerned with the other elements you were talking about. That, though, they were more of a plot device than anything.
Yeah, perhaps they were.
Yeah.
But it did give me this sense, the idea of this is that the whole town is the horror, right? It's this horror show that happens once every 27 years where kids just go missing and no one seems any wiser about it.
Yeah.
No one decides to dig into this and say, hey, maybe something strange is going on except for these six children. But it kept, again, hinting at, all right, the father does not see the blood in the bathroom when it starts spewing out of the sink. Whenever an adult walks into the room, the clown just disappears out of nowhere.
Yeah.
There is no investigation, as far as we know, going on at the Derry Police Department. That's the name of the town?
Yep.
Town of Derry? Yeah. Derry PD is really sleeping at the wheel here, both literally and figuratively, because they love sitting in their armchairs getting stabbed by their children. That's all the cops in this town are doing. I was waiting for the explanation. Okay. And I was waiting for, oh, wait a minute. The For some reason, I thought a twist was coming. I have to be honest with you. I just thought this was going to be a twist. And I know that's not Stephen King, but, like, I thought, like, we were going to find out that the clown was actually a pedophile and or like, a serial killer or something, and the kids were just imagining things.
Okay.
I just kept waiting for that because it seemed like there was this larger mystery that never got solved.
Yeah.
And, again, I'm just looking for a larger story. And maybe I should be okay with a smaller story.
That's what I love the fact that this is a smaller story. Because I was going to ask, did you know going into that the clown was not actually a clown? Did you know that? The clown is not a clown. It's an entity from another dimension.
Okay, explain this.
Did you know that?
No, of course not.
So wait. So when you saw the trailers for this, you thought it was going to be about like a literal like human being killer clown.
No.
What did you think it was?
I thought it no. Yes,
like a monster.
Yes, I thought it was a monster.
Okay. Okay.
But the monster takes the form of a clown.
Sometimes.
What am I missing here?
That's what I thought you it was going to be like, it's a movie where like a serial killer is running around killing people and he's dressed up as a clown.
Here's what I thought.
What did you think?
I thought it was an actual serial killer, and I thought that this sci-fi was going to be the lens through which we view this story, and there was going to be like a third act twist.
Oh.
That, because it did feel at times like there was sort of... J.J. Abrams does this mystery box thing. That's like his thing. And that's what he sort of attributes all of his film inspirations to. The idea of Spielberg and other filmmakers from the 80s.
Yeah.
Because that's just his era. Creating mysteries out of real life. And that's what he finds interesting in movies. Now, I don't necessarily subscribe to that. But I did feel that sort of mystery boxification of what was going on in this town. That everything is a puzzle that needs to be solved.
Yeah.
And I wish I didn't have that expectation. Okay. Because I've been trained to view movies that way. Specifically movies from that era that way.
Right.
You seem confused.
Expectations.
Are you confused at all?
No.
Okay. I am making sense.
Yes.
Because I sound crazy. These are half-baked ideas, I understand.
Well, it's interesting, though, because expectations I see all the times when people go into a movie and they expect one very, very specific thing, and then they don't quite get that, and they just hate it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem like you hated the movie.
No, I didn't hate the movie.
Okay. Did you like the movie?
I did like the movie.
Okay.
I don't get what all the fuss is about, though.
That's fine.
That's all I'm...
That's okay.
I guess that's all I'm trying to say.
Yeah. I think this movie is... It's hard... For me, it's hard to hate this movie. I think it's completely innocuous in that regard.
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't get why this is the number one R-rated film of all time, or what, number two R-rated film of all time behind Deadpool, I think.
I don't know.
I think it is, yeah. It's by far and away the top horror debut ever, and it's...
I like it more than Deadpool.
Gonna be... Oh, so do I. And it's smashing all sorts of records. It just feels to me like the hype around it and the extra filmic stuff has... I don't know. It has created a layer of importance that I don't think was there initially.
Okay.
And I don't think they tried. Again, this is a lot more of just your standard number one coming of age story, and just like, don't go in that basement or else like the clown's going to get you.
Well, it's a blending of genre elements that just works though, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It is a horror blockbuster, but I don't know. Maybe that's what people have been wanting for a little while, because this has not been a great, you know, past couple months for movies. Even with Dunkirk in the picture, like you know, most people are going to say Dunkirk, and that's fine. But even that, you know, it's one movie, Nico.
Yes.
It's one movie.
Sure.
And everything else has been kind of eh.
Baby Driver was good.
Yeah.
Logan Lucky was good.
No one was going to see Logan Lucky.
I guess
though.
That's true.
No one was going to see Logan Lucky.
People liked Planet of the Apes.
Not enough people liked Planet of the Apes.
People liked the superhero stuff. Wonder Woman knocked people's socks off somehow.
People kind of forgetting about it. I don't know.
No, you're right. Horror is, 100%.
It feels like a nice, it feels like a different flavor that I think people have been yearning for a little while. Certainly one that I've been yearning for.
Sure. I think it's insane to think that this is better than Get Out. I think it is absolutely ridiculous to make that assertion.
I like what Get Out has to say is nice. And I like how it basically gives a big fuck you to liberal logic and liberal racism, which is great.
Sure.
Something that I am, you know, I'm completely on that side. I just think the execution in Get Out is so flat.
Oh, I think you're
there's
so
there's like one scene, like the dream sequence is kind of unique. It's just everything else is like, eh. Okay.
It did.
It's fine.
To me, I think the difference is the horror feels a little more earned in that one. Whereas this one, it at times does not always. There's this montage earlier on when they all start seeing the clown for the first time.
Yeah.
And there's not much exposition done here, which I appreciate in mm-hmm. modern blockbusters. I don't like getting to know the characters all that well. Let's just get to it sometimes. But it does feel like we're just stringing a bunch of creepy scenes together mm-hmm. for eventually we're gonna connect the dots and we're gonna get to where we're going. Yeah. It just doesn't feel like one event leads to another in the best way. And Get Out certainly does feel that way. And that way it did feel a little bit cheap at first. I think, again, it does bring it together towards the end. And that's probably the ambition. I don't know. This is certainly a horror film first and foremost. Yeah. And it doesn't pretend that it's not a horror film.
Horror, it's weird. But it's, again, it's like horror adventure. It's a nice mix.
I guess. Yeah. Some of the scenes didn't feel like they needed to be there. And it did feel like, oh, we have an R rating. Let's do some fucked up things to children.
I've been watching movies recently where there are completely unnecessary scenes. Like, I just rewatched Napoleon Dynamite, which basically you could cut out the entire movie. You could get rid of all of Napoleon Dynamite. There are so many unnecessary elements to that movie, and I kind of love it for that.
Napoleon Dynamite's barely a movie, though.
I don't care. I don't care. Or how about this? The Big Lebowski.
Sure.
You have any idea how much you could cut out of The Big Lebowski?
A lot. Yeah, but that's the point of The Big Lebowski, though.
Yes.
That's a movie about how we write movies. About how we watch movies.
That's true.
Yeah. It is not that, right?
Sure.
So in many ways, it does feel like, all right, here's another setup. And also, the way that they shoot some stuff did feel a little cheap at times. Like, for example, when Billy, that's the name of the...
The main kid?
No, the kid that dies.
Oh, you thought that was poorly shot?
When he goes into the basement for the first time.
Oh, okay.
I felt like that was a little cheap.
All right. Like manipulative?
Yeah, right. I did. And that to me is, I don't know. Like, I get what you're trying to say. Like, there's horror and everything, and you have to overcome your fears, as big or small as they are. It did feel a little manipulative.
Sure.
And that was most of the movie. It was just jump scares.
Right? I hear a lot of people complaining about that. But the thing about that, like, jump scares are only really a problem to me when they're false. And every single time there's a jump scare in this, it's like it's a jump scare being created by the monster. Mm-hmm. And I'm fine with that. Again, it's never as scary as something like It Comes at Night, where it's like there's literally zero jump scares. It's all about the horror of humanity. And
which is way cooler, which I'm way more interested in, I think.
That's a better movie.
Yes.
And it's a better horror film because
Get Out does that as well, but okay.
I wish it did.
Okay.
But okay. Yeah. Get Out's
Get Out is a film about the horror of humanity.
I know it is.
Yeah.
But...
That doesn't have a lot of jump scares. It's not even that scary, but it's still horror.
No. Yeah, like, technically, it's just... Nico, I'm sorry, but Get Out is just so bleh.
No, it's not, dude.
Yeah, it is.
And it's funnier than this movie?
No, it's not.
Oh!
I didn't laugh in Get Out.
Oh, Adam.
I didn't laugh once.
Watch your mouth.
In Get Out.
Watch your mouth.
Where did you
Get Out is a hilarious film. When? That entire scene where they're walking the main character through the dinner party and they're all complimenting him about, oh, Jesse Owens. Oh, you know who I love? Tiger Woods. You know what's in style? Black. Black's in style.
You didn't
style.
Roll your eyes once during that scene?
No, I found it hilarious. I felt like the whole purpose of the movie is encapsulated in that scene.
Oh, wow.
It's not eye rolling at all. It's cringeworthy.
It's so... No.
No, there is awkwardness. There is awkwardness and cringeworthiness that is both horrifying and funny and uncomfortable. And it's
not very deep. It's very on the nose. Come on, dude. Like, it's so obvious to me.
And this is not obvious?
But this wasn't trying to have the great thematic implications that something like Get Out is, though.
The comedy and the horror of Get Out, though, comes from the thematic implications.
Okay.
Whereas it seems like it's the other way around here, right?
Yeah.
It's they sort of find a theme by the end of it, and they find a through line to connect it all, but it's not 100% there.
Sure. I think Get Out comes off as pretentious, though.
Oh, could be a little pretentious. Yes. Yes.
For that reason.
Could be a little pretentious.
As part of the reason, and it's part of the reason for that is because I just think Get Out doesn't really work. I remember leaving Get Out and not finding anything that really stuck in my brain other than, I guess, the teacup, and that was about it.
The teacup, the upside down, or the not upside down, that's a Stranger Thing.
It was like that and him sinking into the floor. That's the only thing that really, like...
Right, in the parallel dimension, yeah.
That was about it, and it's like everything else was just so... It was just
How
so
about him running at the camera and then turning at the last second?
That was in the trailer?
Yeah, remember when they do, when he does like the sharp 90-degree turn and everybody on Twitter started mocking it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that.
Yeah, okay. Fine. It's not surprising to me.
The performances were great, too. Yeah. I mean, these were things that I remembered. I don't know. It just felt a lot. It could be a little pretentious, but I do think, like, I wish I laughed more at the movie with a killer clown. Like, I wish, like, that was rife for more comedy than a social thriller.
I knew it wasn't going to be a social thriller, though. Like, it was not about that. It's and that's, I guess that's another reason why I liked it so much, is because it doesn't care about, it doesn't seem to really care about today's current zeitgeist as much as in regards to, like the social commentary. There's really no social commentary to be found here. It's not concerned with politics or any of that. It's just like, let's just tell a good, concise story about kids growing up and facing their fears, and let's make it, you know, fun and a little scary. And I've been waiting for a movie to just cut out all that other bullshit, and this certainly did that.
Yeah. No, so, and that's totally fair. And that's just a matter of ambition, for sure. Yeah. And I got that. The clown.
Okay.
Bill Skarsgård plays the clown. His name is Pennywise, and he is filling in
for Tim Curry.
Yeah. Filling the shoes of a Wattat legend, Tim Curry, one of our faves.
We haven't even talked about the original It miniseries.
Because I've never seen it.
Okay, good. Don't watch it.
Okay.
It's not good.
Bad, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't even particularly care for Tim Curry in that.
Okay. I thought Pennywise was ridiculous in this.
He is ridiculous.
Yeah.
But that's kind of the Pennywise character.
It was really goofy.
It is goofy.
It was distractingly goofy and not scary.
Okay.
He just wasn't scary. And not saying, like, I love getting scared in the cinemas, but I don't know, man. I should at least, like, not roll my eyes every time he comes on screen. And I thought from the initial introduction, I didn't find him scary at all. Okay. I found the teeth thing to be dumb. I thought the death scene of the kid at the beginning was uncompelling.
I loved it.
You did?
Oh, I loved it so much.
Okay.
Yeah.
I found his voice distracting in that. The final, the moment where he gets killed, I just found, like, goofy.
Okay.
I didn't find that scary or disturbing at all. I'm just like, oh, that's bad CGI. And look, now his arm's off, and now he's crawling away. And I felt that the whole way, and that's a problem.
Yeah, with just the Pennywise character.
Yeah, I did. And maybe that's part of his performance. Maybe it is the character. I don't know. I kind of wish that they took it a little more seriously. And you can still have fun with the premise, and you could still do all this stuff. But you got to ground it a little bit in reality. It's 2017.
I don't know, because I actually, it was more grounded than the miniseries, I can tell you.
Well, no, perhaps. I mean, of course.
Because I get really frustrated with people who say that the Pennywise in the miniseries is scary. Mm-hmm. Because he's not scary, and I don't even think Tim Curry's trying to be scary.
No.
Because he's fucking hilarious.
Well, Tim Curry's trying to be hilarious. He loves hamming it up.
So funny.
That's what he does.
And it's like, that's not what this should be at all.
Okay. But I almost wish, like, they went with that here. I almost wish they gave him some, like, funny lines.
I didn't find him completely, was unscary, because I liked the more ravenous take on him, the fact that he felt more like an animal, and that's what kind of made him a little more chilling to watch, because it made him more, I guess, unpredictable, and just he's so weird. But I don't want to say ridiculous. The only, I guess, really ridiculous part is when he's like doing the dance. But even that, like, I remember watching that for the first time and finding it just completely ridiculous, and then being like, it's kind of creepy now.
I actually found the dance very creepy.
Yeah.
It's because his head doesn't move and his body does.
And this is why I actually like the CGI, because it's an uncanny valley effect, but used correctly. Yeah. Where it's just something, there's something off about it, but you don't necessarily know exactly what it is.
Yeah. You get the same thing with the corpse that is chasing the fat kid through the library.
Yeah.
He sort of has, it's like this 90s claymation effect.
Yeah.
Almost. And this used to happen in like zombie movies a lot, and in monster movies too. For some reason I think of Jumanji every time I think about this idea, and I don't know exactly why. But there's a slight stutter to the way that the CGI moves that I find really off-putting.
It is.
It's because it doesn't feel real, and it doesn't like try to feel real. There's its own chilling, creepy quality to it.
Yeah, it's like when I watch like Hammer horror films and I see the blood, because the blood is like such a, it's the completely wrong color, but it's like it's Oh God, it's like in Dawn of the Dead where the blood should be like much more yellowy, but it's like this really, really, really bright red, mm-hmm. and it just feels so gross and disgusting because of that. And it works better because of that. It's just because you know it's blood, but it looks so off, and it's I don't know what it is about it. It just always irks me every time.
Because it's surprising, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's like little like imperfections like that sure. just work.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's true. Yeah. Yeah. I understood. I just wish, I don't know, they went in one of two directions, and that is either make this thing fucking terrifying or have a little bit more fun with it. Okay. Just for, and I'm not saying that about the whole movie, I'm saying specifically with that character.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Because I think they balanced those two elements very well, mm-hmm. and I don't know. I can see people watching this and finding it very scary. Again, it's hard for me to judge because I don't get scared by movies.
Well, anymore. I'm a pussy and I get scared like crazy and okay. I wasn't that scared.
Okay, that's fine.
There were only a few times where I had to look away. Every time he was running at the straight at the camera or whatever and like shaking feverishly, like I could tell that was supposed to be terrifying and I wasn't terrified.
But you saw that in the trailer again.
Yeah, maybe that's true.
That's the other thing.
I suppose.
Because when I first saw that in the trailer, I was like, oh, whoa.
Yeah.
Again, I wish I hadn't because if I had seen it for the first time, it would have been far more effective.
Yeah.
But that's just movie trailers. What sure. What are you going to do?
Nature of the business, I suppose.
Yep.
I adored the children.
So did I.
Man, oh man, were these children phenomenal.
And thank God for the children in this movie.
Thank Christ for the children.
Yep.
The kid from Stranger Things plays Richie.
Yeah.
He is awesome.
Yeah.
And you know why he's awesome? Because he's just like me.
Yeah.
That's me as a kid. That was me.
Pretty much me as a kid too.
Yeah, that was 100% me.
It's like that. I'm a little toned back. Mm-hmm. I was a little more quiet as a kid. I guess I'm closer to, I'm like a funnier version of Billy.
Yeah.
As a kid.
The stutter.
I did stutter actually.
Did you really?
When I was very little.
Really?
Very, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You just grow out of that?
Yep.
That's the thing that happens? Okay. Mm-hmm. Cool. Okay, maybe. But, all right.
I mean, you're going to be looking for it now on the podcast. Like, is Adam going to stutter? Let's get it out of him. Let's get it out of him.
I don't like the implication that you're that chivalrous, by the way. I don't like that. Your whole bravery. You would think of yourself as Billy.
No, I'm not like.
Yeah, I'm the one that's going into the sewer first.
That's right, Nico. I'm just so much better than you in mm-hmm. every single way. I'm the hero.
No, I'm the pussy that wants to wait outside but crack a lot of wise ass remarks.
So you're like a combination of the wise ass and the Jew.
Yes. Two things I was called a lot growing up. Yeah.
What?
No, I'm kidding. I'm 100% Richie. I'm not quite the fat kid. What was the fat kid's name?
Ben.
Yeah. I was certainly as pathetic as Ben,
yep.
but I didn't have the heart of Ben. Mm-hmm. I did not have the tender side that could woo over a female. I was the loser that was just there making fun of all the other losers thinking I was better than them.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was my favorite character, needless to say. But they all did have just very real qualities to them, whereas normally in these coming-of-age films, they're oftentimes caricatures of sort of one element of childhood. You know, you have the just straight-up bully. You have the badass. You have the nerd. And these characters all felt a little more well-developed, and you get to see how they grew up and what their parents were like and what their influences were and why they are the way that they are.
Mm-hmm.
I really appreciated that. And ultimately, they just had great chemistry. They just worked on screen well.
There's a sense of the team and the group. There's good camaraderie there, and that helps make them feel more authentic
mm-hmm.
as the Losers Club.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And it felt like relationships that I had growing up, too.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Me, too.
That's exactly how I interacted with my friends. And
except the girl. I never had any girls.
No,
in my
there was
group.
No girls.
Literally zero girls.
That is the one thing.
Yeah. Very unreal. Fuck this movie.
Yeah, I was waiting for the girl to tag along in our loser club, too, when we were playing with Pokemon cards. But she never rolled up and was like, I don't feel like I'm a loser when I'm with you guys.
It's like, fuck you.
Yeah, no. I don't remember that.
Never happened.
Yeah, that got garbage poured on her in the girls' room as she smoked her cigarette being all mysterious and shit. I don't remember that girl.
No, never happened.
No.
Yeah.
No, I was still waiting.
Maybe this movie's a little more fundamentally flawed than I thought.
Perhaps.
Maybe.
Now, when you put it that way, absolutely. Yeah, but that's the reason why it worked, and that's the reason why people love it, is the characters worked so well, and the dialogue was a lot of fun.
Yeah, oh yeah.
It's Stand By Me, right? It's Stand By Me with some horror elements to it, and... Yeah. like, I'm down for that movie in 2017 because it doesn't feel like we get enough of them.
It's one of those movies that just resonates perfectly with me on almost every emotional level. Mm-hmm. You know, it's creepy. It's very fun and it's happy. It's heartwarming. Also kind of sad at times.
Yep.
And yeah, it's for me, it's very unforgettable. And I, you know, it's a movie that I was very, very happy to see again, and which has not been the case for almost every other movie that's come out this year.
Yeah.
I've only seen, the only movies I've seen more than once in theaters was Logan and Alien Covenant, but that was, yeah. Right. Not necessarily because I like the movie.
That's an act of scholarship for you.
Yeah.
That's because you have to renew your membership to the Alien fan club.
Essentially.
Yeah, yeah. That's all that is. Paying the dues. All right. Let's talk about the book.
Oh.
You have not read the book.
No.
But you're familiar with the premise of the book.
Oh, yeah.
And you're familiar with the general beats of the book. And this follows them fairly closely, correct?
Yeah. Well, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
At the end of this movie, a title card reveals to us that they're not done making It movies.
No, and I knew that wasn't going to happen.
Okay, but this was not announced. No one said that an It sequel was happening. There was speculation, but no one said that it was going to happen.
It was going to happen.
Anyway, the title card flashes, and it says It Chapter 1, meaning that there will be an It Chapter 2, supposedly, based on what you've told me, on the older versions of these characters.
Yes.
Okay?
That's exactly what's going to happen.
Okay. The ending of the film is these characters, after tracking down this clown in the sewage system of this town, find a bunch of the dead kids that have gone missing, floating up in the air, and Deb? Becky.
Becky.
Bev.
I don't know. Beverly.
Beverly.
Dev?
Dev, close enough.
Beverly.
And they find Beverly as one of those floating kids. They pull her down, save her life, and defeat this killer clown with the power of friendship and the ability to conquer their fears.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fine.
Right. All right. And all is said and done. They vow that one day, if this clown comes back, they will get together to defeat him once again. Are you fundamentally interested in part two of this movie? Do you have any interest in seeing what these kids look like 27 years later, watching Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Emma Stone and I don't know, Charlie Day as old Richie? I'm just coming up with these names out of the top of my head. Fighting a killer clown again.
Well, oh boy. I think I'm interested, but I think for the wrong reasons. The I know from the miniseries and from what I've read about the book, it's the adult section is not very good.
Okay.
The adult section is kind of universally accepted as the weakest element of the It book, and for good reason, because it just becomes nowhere near as scary or as compelling, and it's just not very interesting at that point. There's something more compelling about seeing, you know, these weaker characters, which are the kids, kind of, you know, conquer something that just feels so much greater than them. Whereas when they're the adults, you're like, they're just like, what do they have to worry about other than, you know, I mean, there's plenty to worry about as an adult.
Sure.
But I don't believe the book captures that very well.
Right.
And the miniseries certainly does not. The miniseries gets so...
Oh, so the miniseries gets into both elements.
Yeah. The miniseries does more like what the book does, where it jumps back and forth between adulthood to childhood.
Okay.
And it suffers greatly because of that.
Okay.
But you know, like what when you're watching is like, yeah, well, like the kids section's pretty great, but everything else is painful.
I would imagine it's the difference between a coming-of-age story and just a age story.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's learning about being an adult is much more interesting than being an adult and just having to deal with being an adult.
I think it has it has more to do with your old fears coming back to haunt you in various ways.
Okay.
But I don't know. I'd have to read up on it a bit more, but what I know about it is not very interesting.
Okay.
So
you're not too pumped.
No, I'm interested in the sense that I would like to see if they can do it right.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is such a kind of universally accepted thing that the adult entry in that novel is not very compelling. So I'm interested in the sense that I'm kind of curious to see how they're going to pull it off.
Yeah.
So
and this surprised people for sure. People did not expect this to be.
This was my biggest surprise of the year by far. Absolutely, yeah.
This was not expected to be a good execution of this.
No,
there was a lot of behind the scenes turmoil. Cary Fukunaga, I actually didn't realize until like a week ago that he didn't direct this.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Cary Fukunaga was supposed to direct this and dropped out, and they had to rush to find a director, and they found this guy whose name is
Andy Muschietti.
Andy Muschietti, who did
Mama,
which was very good, right?
I didn't see Mama.
Okay, I heard Mama was good. Yeah. They brought him in to do some cleanup work, as is the nature of studio filmmaking, I guess, these days. The script had a bunch of rewrites. And I think the thing, it might have been recast a couple times. I don't know if Bill Skarsgård was supposed to be Pennywise at first. I could be wrong about that.
I'm pretty sure it was.
Okay. But there was a lot of sort of behind-the-scenes stuff of, you know, how are we going to, you know, we got to rush this thing out. There were delays. And ultimately, it ended with a very effective horror product. And I don't doubt they'll be able to do that down the line if they can mine the sort of correct material out of the novel. Okay.
Yes, Nico?
I'm going to cede the floor to you on this next point. Tell me about the orgy. Tell me all about the orgy.
Okay.
And then we'll end the conversation on this.
In the children's section, not the adult section, in the children's section of the novel, once they've defeated Pennywise, actually, they're basically so scared that this has traumatized them so much that they're never going to be able to rekindle their friendship after this. So Beverly, just in an act of, I guess, desperation to keep it all together, says, "Hey guys, let's fuck." And, you know, she, you know, gets, they lie down on the, in the sewer, all disgusting and shit, probably getting staph infections and whatnot. And one at a time, each member of the Losers Club fucks the shit out of Beverly. Yeah. That's it.
I'm going to do a search right now for it. Orgy. Okay? Because there's controversy surrounding this.
Oh, boy.
Here we go. I'm reading this off of the site known as Entertainment Weekly.
Oh, boy.
Your favorite entertainment news publication.
Yes, yes.
When Stephen King's It arrives in theaters on Friday, it will refamiliarize viewers with Killer Clown Pennywise, the novel's iconic antagonist, who was so memorably brought to life by Tim Curry in the 1990 television miniseries based on King's book. But with fans of that landmark television event, won't see on screen as the novel's most controversial sequence. The climax is... pre-teen orgy. I see what they did there. Towards the end of King's book, which is typically runs over 1,000 pages in print editions and switches between timelines, after defeating Pennywise for the moment, understanding that the group won't be able to escape without being you. Remember, Beverly decides she needs to have sex with the six boys. I'm reading now from the novel. Quote, "I have an idea," Beverly said quietly. Sorry. In the dark, Bill heard a sound he could not immediately place. A whispery little sound, but not scary. Sound. A zipper. What? He thought, and then he... For some reason, Beverly was undressing. The plan works. As soon as Beverly has finished having sex with each of her... They subsequently escape. As recent as 2013, King has commented on the scene, offering some explanation. Quote, "I wasn't really thinking of the sexual aspect of it." Treasure.
Oh my God.
King writes in a post on his official site's message board via his office, "Childhood and adulthood, 1958 and grown-ups. The grown-ups don't remember their childhood. None of it is as it really happened." All right. Intuitively, the losers knew they had to be together again. It's another version of the glass tunnel that connects the children's library and the adult library. Times have aged, more sensitivity to those issues. You think, Steven? So they change. Yeah. Okay. Needless to say, they changed it for the on-screen adaptation. This does nothing to clarify the reason why that thin kind of just seems like you're a fucked up dude that wants to talk about children having sex with each other.
It's growing up. That's sort of part of my growing
Certainly
up.
Not my, yeah, not that. Yeah. A lot of lonely hours spent.
Because I do agree, like the sexual element is something that is very, very common in growing up with you know, many kids of like basically 14 and up.
It's certainly something we think about.
Yeah. Well, I know plenty of friends and friends who are girls who changed drastically after, you know, with their first experience.
At age 12?
No, 14.
At age 14?
Yep.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Not my friends, but keep going. Okay.
The problem I have with it is that you don't... It's the worst thing you could do. It is the worst thing you could do. If she was going to, like, make out, like, give each one, like, a tender kiss, it would have been stupid, but it would have made more sense than being like, hey, guys, let's fuck.
Yeah. And what friendship exactly needs to be saved here? What point are we trying to make? Like, what? That just sounds like, hey, man, you're a horny 14-year-old that's just learning about these feelings. Let's get it on.
And then let's literally never talk to each other ever again because what we did was very fucking weird.
Yeah. No, that part is accurate. Like, that is what would happen after the fact. But just the motivations seem very thin and don't really make any thematic sense.
Thematically, I guess I get where he's coming from. I see exactly where he's coming from. But the problem is, contextually, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
No.
It only makes sense thematically, and that's kind of a problem.
Mm, yeah, and also has nothing – well, certainly has nothing to do with overcoming fear.
No.
You know, certainly
– Maybe it does.
Man, to be in your middle school, Adam Hall –
Yo, I had a girl when did she? She conceived at 13, had the baby at 14.
What?
Yeah, dude. Lewis Mills. Hate you. Fuck you, Lewis Mills. Okay, keep going.
Well, that's unnecessary.
No, fuck that place. I hate that place.
Oh, I thought that was the name of the girl. I was gonna say.
No.
Whoa.
No. Okay,
thank Christ. No. I thought we'd be like in for a lawsuit pretty soon.
No.
Cease and desist orders would be coming out. Okay,
you're I won't mention her name, but yeah, no, she's doing fine. Okay, apparently. Good. All right. She's doing fine.
I'm glad. I was going to say, whoa. Yeah.
Lewis Mills is the name of my high school.
Got it. Okay. No, I mean, all right, understood. Neither here nor there, I guess. Point is, anybody that is complaining about this scene not being included in the film version, you're fucking weird, man. Like... check in somewhere and get some help, because if you're looking for some kitty sex, like, damn. Sorry, man.
If we
stay out of the cinemas.
We needed Nicholas Winding Refn to direct this film. He would have definitely kept that in there.
Good. Yeah.
He would have definitely put that
sure,
in there.
Sure, with a lot of pretentious shots of neon colors, I'm sure.
we need to have a Refn podcast one of these days. I would love it. I would love it.
All right, one of these days. Man, this has been an interesting conversation. Any other thoughts that you have on the film?
No. Go see it. I love it.
Okay. Yeah, it is fine.
Okay.
Yeah, it's good. I enjoyed it. It's entertaining. And if you're not into horror, like, maybe you'll like this one. I was into it. Yeah.
Yes. You know what this is? This is like a great gateway horror film, I think.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? That. It's like a Gremlins.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I could see that. 100%. Yeah.
That's a good one.
I do feel again like it. I wish it had a little more substance, but don't go into it expecting too much, and I think you will be pleasantly surprised with what you're seeing.
I think it has the perfect amount of substance for what it's trying to be.
Sure.
So.
Cool. I feel a lot better about things because I was very confused earlier, and now I feel like I have some more clarity even when we talked about kid orgies. this has been great. Oh, where does this rank in Stephen King's filmography? Let's do this quickly. Let's talk about the Stephen King adaptations, and let's try our best to come up with a top five real quick.
Oh, God. The best – okay, here's the problem. Again, and I hate doing – I love doing lists, and I hate them at the same time because I always have two. I always have what is my personal list and what do I think is technically the best. Mm-hmm. Because technically, The Shining is probably the best Stephen King adaptation, but or at least book to movie that's related to – whatever. But my favorite is probably The Shawshank Redemption, personally. Okay. So, but that's up there. It's it's certainly in the top 10. Oh, God.
I think I'd go The Shining, Shawshank.
Okay. I might put Stand By Me at 3.
I think I'd go Stand By Me at 3. Yeah. I was just about to say that.
And then Misery.
Green Mile's better than Misery.
Ooh, I love Misery.
Green Mile's better than Misery, okay. I think.
I can get behind that.
Yeah.
You know what I like though, and this is gonna surprise you. It's not in the top 10, but it's in the top 20. Because he's got that many.
Well, he's got a lot. Yeah.
I might put Cujo at 11.
I love Cujo. Cujo is Cujo needs to be remade. Yeah. We need a new Cujo. Yes. We need to see what Cujo would look like with 27 that, CGI.
A movie. Well, I would love to see them do it the way they did the old way. Yeah, yeah. It's severely underrated.
Yes. It works really, really well, and they work well with what they have.
That movie first time I saw it, freaked me the fuck out.
Yes, Cujo's very good, and another cultural touchstone, I think.
Yeah.
Love Cujo. He's just really good with that, with imagery and iconography. He's just great with that. Okay, Misery, yeah, it's some order there. I think Green Mile's probably 4. The Mist is totally underrated.
Yes.
I love The Mist. People have forgotten a lot about The Mist, and it's gotten buried. Even in Frank Darabont's filmography, has been buried. We need to talk about The Mist more. I think it's a great piece of social commentary. I just love the whole dynamic. I love the ending. I love the monster elements. I just think it's great. I think it's just a great piece of horror.
Yep.
I agree.
B-movie horror, too. I love it.
Yes.
It's roots in that. Yes. Very good.
Because I love monster movies, actually.
Yeah, so do I.
I'm really into monster movies.
That's part of the reason why I liked it so much, because it is very much a good monster film in those regards.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Am I missing anything? What else is up there?
Oh, God.
Because there's a lot of stinkers, too.
Well, that's
sick. Where does The Dark Tower rank?
I haven't seen The Dark Tower, so. We got to be missing one big one. Stephen King.
Do you know that there's like going to be 5 Stephen King TV shows out at the same time?
Yep.
They're doing for some reason it's like
Bill Skarsgård is in one of them as Pennywise, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
That's what's happening?
I think it's on is it the Netflix show that they're doing?
Yeah, they're doing like an anthology series,
yep,
right?
I think he's in that one.
Okay. Yeah. That's weird. There's also one called Mr. Mercedes that has Brendan Gleeson in it.
Okay.
And I don't know. I guess that's pretty good. That's on like DirecTV or something.
All right.
That sounds made up, but it's true. There's a Stephen King on DirecTV only.
Wow, who the fuck knows? Maximum Overdrive exists.
Never seen Maximum Overdrive.
Why is this a thing?
Okay. Never seen Pet Sematary, actually.
I haven't seen it either, but I hear it's like really, really, really good. Like for what it is.
Yeah, Cujo. Oh, Carrie's got to be somewhere. Right? Oh! Where's Carrie? I love Carrie too.
I love it so much. It's my favorite Brian De Palma film.
No, that's accurate.
Yeah. Oh my God, Carrie might be
4. It'll probably be higher for you.
I do like it more than Misery.
Yes.
Oh man.
You like it better than
I'll go. Shawshank Redemption, Shining, Stand By Me.
Okay.
Carrie. Green Mile, Misery.
Good list.
Yeah.
Okay.
I love Carrie. God, I love Carrie.
And then Creepshow, right?
Haven't seen Creepshow.
I haven't either. You ever seen The Running Man?
The Schwarzenegger?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a guilty pleasure for me.
I had no idea that was Stephen King.
Yeah, that's Stephen King too.
That's weird.
He's got a lot of stuff, man.
Wow.
That this dude has made a lot of his books into movies.
Mm.
Jesus Christ. Oh my God.
It's more than any other author.
Man.
What else? There's got to be something else. I feel like we're...
So they're doing a show called Castle Rock. Is that right?
Oh, of course it's called Castle Rock.
And these are based on his short stories?
Yep.
And Bill Skarsgård is in it. Okay, yeah. It's an upcoming psychological horror web television series created for Hulu. And it's going to...
Castle Rock. Every single... Like, it's in Castle Rock, Maine or whatever.
Okay. Yeah, I guess it's going to be an anthology show.
So I guess he produced Seinfeld.
Yeah. Sissy Spacek, Andre Holland, Terry O'Quinn, Scott Glenn. There we go. All right, cool. This has been fun.
Yeah.
All right. Good. We're in the fall, baby.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
My favorite season.
We're kicking in. It's time for some Oscar bait.
Oh.
Oh my God. Dude. Am I eyeing a lot of these Oscar bait movies, by the way?
There's a few that I still need to see. I need The Beguiled came out a while ago, and that's Sofia Coppola's film, and apparently that could get somewhere.
No.
That'd be surprising.
I heard it was horrible.
I heard it was very good.
I heard people hated it.
Really?
Yeah.
I heard something completely different.
Okay. Well, all right. That's coming up. There's a few that I have to catch up on from the summer. I haven't seen The Big Sick yet.
I haven't seen
the new Spider-Man yet.
No, neither have I.
Have not seen... there's another one. Haven't seen Detroit.
I saw Detroit.
Okay. Yeah, I got to catch up with that.
That's not going to win anything.
But. Okay. But man, we're heading into the fall. It's time to get snooty. And that's where we exist, man.
We have a big one coming up, and I think it might be our next movie hopping.
What's next?
Blade Runner.
Ooh, already?
Yeah, October 3rd, I think.
Oh, my God.
And we're like halfway through September already.
So. Jesus Christ, right around the corner. Oh, my God, yeah. Blade Runner 2049. Can't wait for that. That's going to be a lot of fun.
It's my most anticipated film of the year.
Yeah.
Personally, yeah.
Absolutely. All right, man, I can't wait. This has been great. That's Adam. You're at Some Adam Hall on Twitter?
Yes, I am.
I am at FunnyNicoTweets on Twitter. Go to TooManyThoughtsMedia.com, TMT.media, for all of our podcast endeavors, including videos, and maybe next week we'll do a video. I don't know. Or maybe we'll just make this an audio thing from here on out.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. We'll see. We'll find out.
We're lazy, you know.
We are so lazy.
So fucking lazy.
Man, if only we'd like really put the pedal to the metal on this.
Put your amount of effort that you put into your football fucking ego, you shit. No, I like football too, so it's okay.
Fantasy football, man, in full swing. This is all right. Great. Yeah, check all that out. And until next time, happy movie hopping.
Happy movie hopping. Thank you.